Good morning. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is Tuesday, April the 12th, 2022, and life goes on. There is no shortage of topics to talk about, including proposed tax changes, the never-ending proposed tax changes going on in the United States generally, and the Biden Green Book in particular. And joining me today is the world's favorite tax lawyer, Virginia Latorre Jeeker, to discuss some of these issues, first generally, and secondly, how they affect Americans abroad particularly. Welcome, Virginia. How are you today?
Hey, John. Thanks for having me back. I'm doing great, and I hope you are too.
All right. Well, it's a nice sunny day here. Okay, you know, of course, these documents are hundreds of pages and they're filled with all kinds of gobbledygook, probably designed in a general sense so that the sheer volume obscures a lot of the detail and nobody can figure out what's going on. But there are some very, very significant changes to the U.S. tax system proposed. And one of them has to do with the taxation of transfers of capital property. And I wonder if we can focus on that issue today.
Yes, that's a great idea, John, because that proposal will impact Americans abroad in significant ways.
I think it absolutely will. Okay, I think maybe we should begin to sort of a hypothetical situation. And we should talk about what the law is today and what the proposal is. So let's take just a situation where a person owns a piece of real estate that he purchased for, say, $200,000, and today it's worth $1 million. And you know, that person wants to transfer the property to somebody else. And there's basically two ways, I guess, one could do that. You could sell it, I guess, right?
Sure.
Or you could give it away. And if you sell it, you're getting something in return. So under the existing law, how would that be taxed? Just a straight sale, Virginia?
Right. Well, you would look for the gain or loss that was realized by this transferor or seller on the property. And in your example, he bought it for $200,000. Let's make it simple, not take any depreciation deductions or things like improvements to add to that. And he then sells it for, did you say $800,000?
Oh, or $1 million? $1 million.
So he sells it for $1 million, and he's got therefore $800,000 in capital gain, and he'll be taxed accordingly. The maximum rate would be a 20% capital gains tax. Now, the other way he could handle this situation is if he, for example, really loved the person and didn't want to sell it to them and wanted to make a gift to that person. We would then have a gifting transaction where he wouldn't get anything in return and he would not have any gain or loss, but he might have a gift tax imposed. And as you may know, if you have a gift tax being imposed, you can use your lifetime exclusion amount to reduce or eliminate the amount of gift tax that is due. And currently that exclusion amount is worth about $11 million. To the extent you use it during your lifetime on making taxable gifts, then you have less of that $11 million exclusion amount to use against any estate tax that might be owing when you pass away and have an estate tax assessed against your worldwide assets. So those are the two basic ways and the impact on the transferor or the seller or the donor in our gifting case. And let's look at the person who receives that property in both scenarios. What would happen to him? In the case where the person has purchased the property, he will take what's called a basis in that property, really at what he's paid for it. So that would be essentially the fair market value price that he paid. In our example, that was $1 million. So when that buyer later sells the property, he will use the cost basis of $1 million to determine his gain or loss upon a later sale or disposition. In the gifting transaction, the lucky person who got the property as a gift, he takes what's called a carryover basis from the donor who gave him the gift. And in our example, the donor had a basis of $200,000. And so the person who got the gift will then have a basis in the property of $200,000. And when he sells it later on, if he sells it, let's say, for $1 million, then he calculates his gain with that $200,000 basis. So that is a carryover basis from the donor. The other instance, John, that we didn't really talk about is, what if that same piece of property was left as an inheritance to someone? What would happen there? And I think that ties in nicely with the Green Book proposal, so we may as well discuss that transaction as well. So we have our property worth $1 million. The person dies owning it, and it will be taxed in his U.S. estate according to the estate tax rules. And, you know, if he can use his exemption amount of the $11 million, it will wipe out any estate tax that might otherwise be due, because he has that full exemption amount. The person who inherits the property, the heir, gets really lucky. He gets a basis in the property that stepped up to the property's fair market value on the date of death, which in our example was $1 million. So this $800,000 of appreciation in value of the property escapes taxation altogether.
Let's pause on that for a minute. Could you repeat that? I think that's hugely significant. So to put this in context, if I knew I had 30 days to live, and I had this piece of real estate that I paid $200,000 for, and it was worth $1 million, and I was on my hospital bed, and somebody came to me, my loved one came to me and said, please, please give me this property before you die. Would it be true, the most loving thing I could say to him would be, you know, I'll do that if you want, but I love you so much that please let me die so I can just leave it to you in my will, because that means the whole appreciation from 200,000 to a million is going to escape taxation. Is that a fair statement?
That's an absolutely fair statement, John.
Yeah, that's really an amazing thing, isn't it?
It is. And it's so amazing that President Biden wants to get rid of it.
Well, now that does not surprise me somehow. I mean, there are a lot of people who seem to be offended by the notion that this kind of transfer of property by bequest, really can result, unless it's independently subject to an estate tax, can really result in the appreciation escaping taxation altogether, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
My God, it almost gives, you know, thinking about death a new meaning, doesn't it?
Right. Well, those are the current rules that we have now. And we should look at how the Biden tax proposal will be changing, or maybe changing all of that.
Well, and I think this is going to become the law, maybe not today or tomorrow, but not too far down the road, because for the U.S. to make the change we're about to talk about would be completely consistent with what Canada did a number of years ago, and I understand Australia did. So this is not radical stuff at all.
It is not. There's precedent for sure. And I think as well, this kind of chain would be not only an enticing revenue raiser, but it would also help society that's viewing, oh, this wealth must be redistributed, and, you know, higher income and asset wealthy taxpayers should be paying more. This might be viewed as a proposal that kind of levels the playing field a little bit. What do you think?
Well, we'll discuss that, but first let's be clear on what the proposal actually is. So what's the president and his cabinet proposing here?
Right. Well, in a nutshell, I would say what they're proposing is to tax the unrealized capital gain. So in our example, that was the $800,000 of appreciation, to tax that when a gift is made or when an asset is passed at death. So this unrealized appreciation will be taxed to the giver of the gift or to the person's estate who's passed away immediately at that time. And it will be an income tax. It's not a gift or an estate tax, which is a tax on the value of properties passing by gift or at death. This is an income tax. It's taxing these capital gains that were otherwise not being subject to tax.
So what do you say that they're really just treating what is today understood to be a gift or bequest as a pretend sale?
That's correct. That's a really good way to put it. It's a pretend sale of the asset that you made a gift of or that you passed at death by your will or the intestacy statutes, et cetera.
Now, let's now revisit this, the same example. And let's imagine that these rules are in effect. So as a reminder, we have a piece of, let's call it vacant land to make it clear there's no residual issues on, you know, okay, vacant land worth $200,000, fair market value $1 million. Okay, now here we go. Person is, you know, somebody comes and says, I want your land, sell it to me. And you say, no, but you know what? I'll give it to you. All right, now take me through the scenario this time. What happens?
Right. So you're making a gift of the property and it will be treated as a pretend sale. So you, the giver of the gift, have to pay a capital gains tax on that $800,000 of appreciation.
Even if you've received nothing in return.
That's right. You've received nothing in return, but it is a pretend sale. So there's deemed to be income received.
Okay.
And you may not have the cash to pay the tax, but that's not the problem of the of the tax authorities.
That's exactly right. Now, you know, and this is if it's a deemed sale, it must be a capital gains tax, right?
That's what it's listed as. That's how it's described in the proposal.
Okay. And would that mean, by the way, the possibility of a net investment income tax as well?
I think it absolutely means the net investment income tax is implicated here. That 3.8% surcharge is certainly a possibility.
Do you think the U.S. has too many separate taxes?
I think, John, the system's getting so complicated, it's about to implode on itself. And this proposal is adding in so much more complexity because we haven't touched on it yet, but I'm sure we're going to get there. The proposal does not mention getting rid of our current gift and estate tax regimes.
You know,
so they may also apply at the same time as this deemed sale of this asset.
Yeah, I mean, this is the part of it. I mean, I think that you know, any rational policymakers would get there, but it's particularly interesting to me because, you know, Canada had a major tax reform in the last century. You know, in the early 70s, and Canada had estate and gift taxes, but at the same time, the Canada moved to the treating the gift as the deemed disposition or deemed sale. Canada also got rid of the estate and gift tax thing. But I mean, you're right, the indications from the Green Book. And to be fair, I mean, it doesn't say that they would never consider getting rid of the estate or gift tax, but it's actually simultaneously both taxes.
That's right.
I mean,
it's not clear how these regimes would work together. And I don't think it's clear to the administration either, because they dance around it a little bit and they never really make much sense out of it. So having a deemed sale rule upon a gift or death transfer to me, it makes no sense if the gift and estate tax can simultaneously apply. I don't see how they can really all work in harmony. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, it would be extraordinary, wouldn't it? It would be absolutely extraordinary to keep those two things. I mean, what it would mean would be, you know, depending on what the limitations are on this or the exclusion, because they don't even necessarily have to be the same. My impression of it would be that almost everybody would pay, or far more people would be subject to the deemed sale rule. And then, as it's currently written, some people would get an extra bonus penalty, okay, you know, by being subject to the gift and estate tax regime. So, this is amazing stuff. And it illustrates, I think, the problem of trying to make tax policy focusing only on the objective you're trying to achieve without considering how it fits in with other parts of the law, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think part of the problem is, John, that the people who are coming up with these grandiose plans do not have an understanding of the tax code the way practitioners such as you and I do.
Well, you think, yeah.
You think. This is why they shoot from the hip, and then we're left with holding the bag and trying to make sense of it all. And the IRS is left trying to come up with regulations to make it all work seamlessly, and that's impossible to do.
It is. And again, you know, the IRS is honestly a huge victim of this way of, you know, this what you call the shooting from the hip approach to tax policy. Okay. Now, I would imagine that a lot of people resident in the United States would be extremely nervous about this. I mean, if they really thought it through, it does seem to me, well, it's obviously intended to be a massive revenue raiser.
That's right.
Because, you know, not only does it capture the tax that was escaping the capital gain on the bequest, but it also seems to me to end deferral, right? In other words, you know, you can't just pass things on forever, you know, without, and this is a very powerful thing. Now,
it's shaping social policy as well, John.
Well, it certainly is. And I think one might legitimately ask, I mean, is the purpose of a tax system, you know, to do this kind of social engineering? That's debatable. But, you know, so much of the U.S. tax in general, whether it's Canada, U.S., is, you know, it's really punitive stuff, right? I mean, it's rewarding people who do things the government likes, punishing them for people the government doesn't like. I mean, just yesterday I was reading that Senators Wyden and Portman have come out with some proposed law to, you know, to disallow tax credits for companies who pay tax to Russia now. You know, I mean, this is just clearly using the Internal Revenue Code as a sanction, you know, rather than anything else. But that said, it does seem to me that this whole thing, and I'm surprised that Americans abroad groups are not all over this, because this does seem to me to be the type of thing that is definitely going to complicate the lives of Americans abroad. And, you know, if I can, you know, begin by just sort of interjecting something, and this is my perspective from living in Canada. You know, Canada imposes the same kind of tax, right? So somebody living in Canada or Australia presumably would have a tax credit to offset the U.S. tax, right?
Yes.
All right. But, you know, Canada and Australia are only two countries. There's an awful lot of countries that don't have this rule. So would it be fair to say that for Americans abroad who are dual tax residents and are therefore subject to tax systems of other countries, isn't this really just a surcharge for being an American citizen?
It sounds like it is, because I think what you're saying is they're going to be paying tax on this pretend sale in the United States system, but there won't be a tax in their country where they're living because they didn't sell it. But that tax is going to come maybe at a later date. Is that what you're saying?
Possibly. I mean, I think that's possible. But I think what's almost guaranteed is that they're going to have to pay this U.S. tax, And it's a tax they wouldn't pay necessarily, right, in that other country, because under the other country's tax rules, it might not be a taxable transaction, right?
That's right.
So, you know, it's hard to know how this plays out. And as usual, I think the question is, well, tell me what country you live in, and then I'll tell you how it affects you, right?
Yeah.
You know,
but really, I think generally, John, it's going to impact Americans abroad in really significant ways that are aside from this issue that we're talking about, this pretend income that kind of fits in with the way the U.S. taxes Americans abroad already. You know, we have subpart F, it's pretend income. We have GILTI, it's pretend income. We have that transition tax, totally pretend income. We have the exit tax rules, again, pretend income if you're expatriating. So this is just another one that hits the American overseas.
Yeah, in other words, it's an income tax without any money received, right? Without a realization of that. That's right.
That's right.
Big problem. Another thing that's very interesting about this is looking at the proposal, as is pretty much the norm. I understand the proposal says that spousal transfers are generally exempt from this.
That's correct.
As long as the recipient spouse is a U.S. citizen, correct?
Absolutely.
So what happened?
That didn't come as a surprise to me.
Yeah. So in other words, if you are an American abroad who's not married to a U.S. citizen, you're in danger of being subject to this tax, right?
That's right. You know, you may be gifting items to your spouse, and you know, we do have a super annual exclusion amount for the gift tax purposes that you can gift a certain amount to a non-U.S. citizen spouse and not pay gift tax. I think that amount is about $164,000 currently. So this super annual exclusion is permitted there, but you may have this built-in gain that is going to be subject to capital gains tax when you make that gift to your non-U.S. citizen spouse, because there is no exemption for that non-U.S. citizen spouse, whereas there is if the spouse was a U.S. citizen.
Now, I mean, this is one of the most terrible aspects, I think, of the tax treatment of Americans abroad. I mean, if it isn't bad enough to add insult to injury that, you know, if you happen to be married to somebody who's not an American citizen, you're even more at risk of these types of problems, right?
That's true. But, you know, we already have that for the gift tax. We have that problem. So it's not like this is something brand new. And, you know, again, what the law is trying to do is to say, look, we don't want that non-U.S. citizen spouse to be able to take that asset away from the U.S. tax system with all of its appreciation and never be taxed. So if you take the example of you make a gift to a non-citizen spouse who never resides in the U.S., never becomes domiciled there, the U.S. will never get the tax owed on the appreciation if that non-U.S. citizen spouse makes a gift of that property later on or passes away, and it will not be taxed in the U.S. estate because this person is not a U.S. domiciliary for gift or estate tax purposes. That's what the law is trying to do. It's trying to say, we don't want that appreciation in property value to escape tax. So
you don't want the appreciation in the hands of somebody who's not a U.S. tax resident, basically.
That's right. That's right. Because all the appreciation accrued in the hands of the U.S. person. And if he sold it or she sold it, they would be paying tax on that gain.
Right.
Okay. So I get it. I know it sounds very harsh, but I understand that the theory behind the rule.
Oh, the theory is very, very clear. There's no question about it. You know, but it does impose, I think, tremendous, sometimes the actual, but always theoretical harm to American citizens who are married to non-citizens. You know, another thing that occurred to me as we were discussing this was, I mean, you know, so you've got some American outside the United States and transfers that piece of property, what have you. You know, we've got the usual phantom capital gain problems, right? Because, I mean, you know, we have to look at the exchange rate of the date of transfer, the date of acquisition. I mean, we've got that whole headache as well, don't we?
Oh, we do. Foreign currency gains and losses. It's not lost on me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is amazing stuff. So, I mean, it occurs to me that this is going to create, you know, and really aggravate the compliance burden that Americans abroad already have. I mean, you know, so maybe they should keep a notebook of, you know, everything they have and where it is, and, you know.
John, the very sad thing is, you know, we see, I mean, I see in my practice, and I know you see in yours, a lot of Americans who have been living abroad for many years, have their lives overseas, are married to non-US people and so forth and so on, and have likely taken on citizenship of another country. They are looking to now get rid of their US citizenship. These kinds of proposals with the complexity, it's not so much as, gee, am I even gonna have to pay tax? It's just, how am I gonna figure this stuff out? Where am I gonna find a tax return preparer who knows what this is all about? It's become such a stressful situation for people to deal with the unknown complexities of the tax system that just every year gets worse and worse for the American abroad. And this is just another example of how we're gonna have problems here.
Well, I think it's a particularly good example, but, you know, I think the one thing we might reasonably focus on is how this, I mean, I think we would agree that this complexity is driving people out of their citizenship because they want to be able to comply with the law, but just find it too difficult to do so. But, you know, as you know, part of expatriation planning is the gifting, right? To get people below the $2 million,
right? And, that's right. That's,
you know,
right.
To me, to, you know, potentially create a lot of problems with being able to make gifts to get below the $2 million, right? Because if all of a sudden the gifts are now taxable, you know, you've created an additional problem for yourself. And I don't think that, you know, these proposals began, and this could sit around for 5-7 years, and then, you know, it may become a law. But would it seem reasonable to you? Would it be prudent to advise clients who are reasonably sure they're going to expatriate to make these gifts sooner rather than later, before the possibility of any of these laws being passed? I think, for example, with the Green Book, don't they say that if this were to take effect, it would take effect January 1, 2023?
That's right. So there's a small window of opportunity for people to use the current system and as far as we know, be able to use their $11 million exemption amount, the lifetime exclusion amount. We don't know what's going to happen with that under the Biden proposal. I mean, nothing was mentioned about lowering it in this Green Book, but it is set to sunset anyway in a few years. So really, the sooner the better for you to make your gifts, because clearly the best way to do it is to make the gift in one calendar year and expatriate in the following calendar year, not to do everything in the same calendar year. We've talked about that before. So, you know, people are going to need more time to plan. And my advice is, yes, hurry up. Don't wait.
Yeah, I think that that's exactly right.
I do want to mention, John, the Green Book had a $5 million exclusion amount for this pretend capital gain, okay, per individual, per person. And it's a $5 million exclusion amount in total. So like that's for your whole life from what I could tell. And to the extent you have not used that during lifetime transfers or transfers at death, what you had left over from your $5 million exclusion amount, which by the way is going to be adjusted for inflation, you would get to, the surviving spouse would get to use that and carry it over. So it's a portability amount. And we have a portability for estate and gift tax purposes, but again, this is only for U.S. persons, for U.S. citizen spouses. So you can't use this portability for, you know, the gift and estate tax or for this new proposal if your spouse is a non-U.S. citizen. So just to keep that in mind, another way the non-U.S. citizen spouse has a little bit of a problem with that.
Yeah, well, all of this is, I think, part of a general principle of sort of the evolution of making sure that if you look to the left, you're taxed. If you look to the right, you're taxed. Up, down, side. If you do anything, you're going to be taxed. And I think that what's upsetting the administration is the idea that somehow you can get rid of property by way of gift and it might escape taxation. I think that's basically the root of what's upsetting them. And, you know, to be fair, okay, not just the U.S. government, but I mean, this is, I think, a general sort of trend, taxation. One of the things that I find interesting on more of an academic or theoretical level that I hadn't really been conscious of until we started thinking about this was the part of the issue here is that historically these estates and gift taxes really predate income taxes by like centuries, right? So, you know, it seems to me the whole concept of estate and gift tax is really just, you know, carryover basis, but it's a carryover relic, you know, from a different way of thinking about taxation. And, I mean, do you think there's any chance in our lifetimes that the United States might do something rational, like sit down and say, we're going to create a brand new tax system from the ground up and stop, you know, trying to do patches here and there?
Wouldn't it be nice? I don't know.
I mean, you know, I mean, that's what's necessary. And I think you can see this so clearly. I mean, the whole idea of, you know, in the Green Book, bringing in this new kind of tax on gifts without considering whether the estate and gift tax regime should survive is, you know, I think it's just unbelievable. Do you imagine being subject to both of them?
Certainly. At the moment, that's how it sounds. It can certainly hit, you know, the capital gains and gift and estate tax issues can all be rolled up and affect you. The way the proposal is written now, it's clear to me they're not getting rid of it.
It's absolutely clear because, I mean, there's a sentence in there that says something about how, in a vague way, you're going to get some. That somehow, if the gift and estate tax provisions kick in, there will be some recognition for a tax you paid under the income tax part. You know, whatever that's supposed to mean.
Right.
I just see this as, you know, like you, this is so complicated that, I mean, what's somebody to do? I mean, they're supposed to keep a notebook, you know, documenting everything they own, everything they do. I mean, it's almost reached that point, isn't it? Do you think that airlines ought to offer a special class of service, American class, that gives them a printout of how much time they spent in American airspace? And a perk of business class?
I think people are going to become more and more afraid to spend much time in the U.S.
Well, I think that's absolutely true. Absolutely true. Well,
so John, we will be doing a blog on this Green Book proposal. You and I will be writing something together, and people can find out much more about it at your website and also at mine.
Yeah, and I think that I hope people pay attention to this because this is important, practically, theoretically, but I think especially symbolically, in the sense that once again, this is rolled out with any consideration of how it affects Americans outside the United States, right?
Who,
at least from a compliance perspective, are going to be very, very badly affected by this.
Absolutely.
Well, interesting. As usual, great discussion. You know, every time I have these discussions with you, I always understand it better at the end of the discussion. So you're a great teacher, and I hope people benefit from this. Any closing thoughts, including how would people get a hold of you?
Sure. I think people can certainly learn a lot if they go to my my website and read up. My blog has a lot of posts that cover these kinds of issues and issues affecting Americans abroad or foreigners with U.S. connections in any way. So they can find me at www.us-tax.org.
All right. Well, that's great. Well, thank you so much, Virginia. And thank you for today. And I look forward to our next discussion of these issues.
I do too, John. Thank you for taking the time today.
All right.